The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another weekly edition of the UAB Director's Chair. He is the UAB Athletic Director. He's on the left-hand side of the screen here. Of course, I'm on the right side, Tony Curry, along with Mark Ingram. He's the man getting it done. And, of course, we are so grateful to have him on every single week talking about UAB Sports, UABSports.com, UABSports.com. Fantastic week for the basketball program. We have a blackout coming up. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. We also have awesome emails to get into, info@tonycurryradio.net. And of course, you can hear the show wherever you find your favorite podcast. We're available on every major industry, including the Tony Curry Radio Facebook page. What's going on, brother? How are you doing, man? Everything good?
It's February.
We got Valentine's Day coming up. You got love in the air. What's Mr. Ingram doing there for Valentine's Day?
Step up my game, Tony. I'm going to need to step up my game when it comes to birthdays, anniversaries, Valentine's, these sort of things. Mr. Ingram needs to step up his game.
Yeah, let me ask this, because summed out the basketball game last week. The beat Memphis was fantastic. Was the greatest atmosphere I've seen at Bartow. And honestly, I've been in that place 150 times. I can't not remember it looking that good. It was just fantastic from rafters to the floor. It was just fantastic. So I hope everyone got a chance. And I think it was a sellout. And of course, a huge win against a potential top 10 team. But I see you down there, and sometimes I see you with the wife. Sometimes I see you with the family. Sometimes I don't. And I know you're hitting the floor every 3 or 4 minutes and you're doing some type of presentation. And this is at football games, volleyball games, archery, bowling, this, that, and the other. So how often are you at events as an athletic director? I think a lot of people think you just go to football and basketball games and you're shying away from everything else. You're everywhere. So how does daddy play that out with his little lady at home when you have special events?
Well, I try to bring her to as many as I can. You know, I was at our women's basketball game last night. We beat Florida Atlantic here. Our women's basketball team, by the way, is tied for first in the American Athletic Conference. So, Randy Norton's doing a great job there. He's brought in some really good talent to this year's team, some speed and athleticism. But yeah, you know, I don't have a set number, right? Like, I go to every home men's basketball game. I go to every football game, home and away, unless there's some really unique personal thing. Like, my brother-in-law got married and we happened to be on the road at Charlotte, like my first year, the first year we played football, 17. And so, like, I missed that game for something like that. But otherwise, unless it's like a big event for one of my kids, sadly, I miss a lot of their games, but but if it was state championship or something, you know, I'd be at that instead. I go to most of the home women's basketball games, and then I'm probably at a third of everything else between men's soccer, women's soccer, softball, baseball. Yeah, it gets really busy in the spring because, like, softball and baseball play so many games.
Yeah.
Same, you know, about a third of volleyball when I can. It's just hard to do all that. And then, of course, balance being a husband and a dad and just trying to – I'm just trying to be okay. Like, I'm not even trying to be great at those things. I'm just trying to be okay, you know, to keep my nighttime gig if I can, just good enough to not get fired from my wife is what I'm trying to be.
There you go. And I think it takes a very special woman to be married to a man like you. I mean, ask Miss Terry Saban what she's put up with, you know, over the years, and takes a very special woman to be part of that type of a pattern situation. Do student athletes know who you are? Do they know you're the crap? I mean, when Mr. Mark Ingram walks into the room, do they get a wigged out a little bit? Do they know who you are?
I don't know if they get nervous. I hope they don't get nervous. I mean, but most of them know who I am. You know, we've talked about this on the show on a different topic. So we've got 450 student athletes, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% to 45% are now, because of the new transfer rules, they're rolling over 40, like, to that rate. It used to be, you know, 20-25%. Now it's 40-45%. So there's a ton of them that are brand new every single year, almost half. Are brand new every single year. So it's not like when I say the old days before these transfer rules, when you would see a kid as a freshman and they would most likely be with you for 3 or 4 years and you get to know somebody over that amount of time. They're just not with you as long anymore. And you got grad transfers that come in for 1 year, which, depending on the season, if it's a fall sport, really might be one semester. And so, sadly, I don't think any of us as ADs know our student athletes as well as we used to, because they're just not, they're not with you as long as they used to be. But yeah, I meet with every student athlete one time a year, which is in the fall. So again, if you're a spring sport, you'd miss that. Or sorry, if you don't get here till the mid year, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. You don't get here. Like if you transferred in January, we had, I don't know, 10 or 15 football players that are brand new in January. If they're with us this fall, which they should be, they'll see me this fall and I'll go to their practices and stuff. They'll see me around, but I don't necessarily go address them, but I address all the student athletes at the start, the day before the first class every year.
There you go. UABsports.com is the website. He is Mark Ingram, the UAB Athletic Director. That's why it's called the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week here on the TKR app, and of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, and of course, right here on our YouTube channel as well. We'll talk some classic rock coming up towards the end. We always want to get some classic rock going, so we'll get into that. And by the way, the music was fantastic for that basketball game, too, that Memphis game.
And
everything was just tight. It was super. It was like you can just tell when everyone's on. You know, everyone was on. It was like you sat down with everyone from the guy who controls the lights in the bathroom to the music guy to the PA announcer. He had a little extra hitch in his giddy up. I could tell that he was squealing a little bit. It was great. It was cool. It was great. So
yeah, cool. I appreciate cool. you saying that, man. I was really.
I see things like that because I'm a PA guy and I've worked behind the scenes. I worked at ESPN. I see those things and. You know, I may be the only guy that when I listen to a radio station, I listen for commercials instead of the content. Yep. I mean, I listen for that programming content. So I'm sitting there with my son who wants to get, you know, delve more into SIDs and to college sports as a whole. And I see these things and how they're working and where this person's going and why they're running off that thing. And I'm seeing, you know, 15 corgis. I'm watching 15 corgis running on your... Which was, by the way, one of the funniest things I've ever seen. You should do that at every game. You should do Basset Hounds next week. So I'm like, okay, this little boy just put these pair of pants on during this little contest. I want to see who's going to be taking him off the floor to get back on before the time. So I love that stuff. And it was tight. It was good. It was great.
I was really proud of our team, not just the actual team, but our administrative team that put the Memphis game together. And it was the largest crowd that we've had since we played Auburn in December of 2016.
Wow.
And the difference between that game and this game was that there were a lot of Auburn fans here that night, mm-hmm. right? There were probably a couple thousand Auburn fans that night. Whereas in this case, I think we kind of estimated a few hundred Memphis fans. So the majority of the people were there to support UAB and, I think that's what made that atmosphere so different. And of course, we won this game. We lost the Auburn game. But the Auburn game was a close game.
Yeah.
I don't remember the score, but I want to say it was a 5 or 7 point type. You know, we were in the game. But the fact that we won the game, we were winning the game most of the second half. I think maybe all the second half. But, you know, we just played well. Mm-hmm. You know, we played well, and that made people really excited. We had over 1,000 students, which makes a huge impact.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Now I know that you know, and I know students, you know, they get shoved down that little corner there, but they got their own spot. But the student section really stepped it up for that game, and that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, they've been great, and you know what happens is in basketball season, because you have so many games. I mean, these kids, the students have homework, they have tests, they have papers due. And so it's harder sometimes actually for them to come to basketball games. Football, you know, is almost always on a Saturday. And so it just feels different, you know, Saturday, they've kind of committed to being their off day, you know, a lot of them. So getting more of them to a football game is a bit easier than a week, you know, Tuesday night, a Wednesday night, whatever, Thursday night basketball game. So it was a great success to be able to get that many there. And they just totally set the tone for the rest of the building. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're just jumping up and down and screaming and stuff. And it makes the rest of us adults kind of go, oh, what are they doing? Maybe we should do, what are they doing? They're doing, you know, and next thing you know, you're cheering. So, it was a great, great scene. And so glad that we're able to get a victory in front of that many people. And so now what I'm hoping is students, fans, everybody that was there will come back. You know, we played Florida Atlantic, who, as you all know, went to the Final Four last year and is
pretty good.
Currently playing great, beat us at their place this year. We got them. We're one of the only teams that beat them last year. We did it here in Bartow Arena. And so next week, next Thursday night, We're doing a blackout. So the team's going to wear black. We're asking all of our fans to wear black, which is kind of funny. But I'm hoping that we can have a similar crowd to what we had against Memphis.
It is a great thing. And it's the one thing about UAB, and thank goodness we've had winners, chicken dinners for a long period of time. But that is, it's got to be one of the best home court advantages in all of sports, is it not? Down at Bartow Arena. I'm not just saying that to blow smoke up here. You know what? It's amazing. I mean, you could be 9-13 and you were a 4-point dog against Memphis. And I'm looking at that line going, wait a minute, why in the world is UAB only getting 4 points in this ball game against a team that was top 10 a week ago? And now we know why. But that home floor is a baby.
Look, man, we had 21 turnovers in the Memphis game.
I know, right?
And if we, you know, if you, it would be a bad night to have 15, but if you had 15 or 12, you know, we might win that game by 25 points.
Of course, they had 22, which helps.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. They had 22. But the point is, like, we could play a lot better than we played. And we have these moments. You know, we beat North Texas last night in a thrilling fashion, a huge comeback victory at North Texas in overtime. Which is another big, big win for us, because North Texas, I think, was like 5-2 in the league at the time. Like, we had the same record maybe in the league, and there's something like 14-3 or 15-3. They'd won 18 straight home games. So that was their first home loss in a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, remember they beat us in the NIT finals last year. They were very good, and they had almost everybody come back to this year's team. They lost a great player in their point guard, but otherwise they had nearly everybody back, and they hired a staff that their head coach was on their staff last year. So they really maintained a lot of positive
confidence. It would have been really easy to chalk up just not showing up kind of game after that Memphis game. I mean, it would have been really easy to guy. I would have said, listen, I'm going to give you this one. If you lose by 20 tonight, this will be the game where it happens. And for them to pull off that thing in overtime was fantastic.
Yeah. Now we're at SMU on Sunday. And then, like I said, Florida Atlantic back here next Thursday. So big win last night as well. And just really proud of Andy's team for they've improved a ton and still have a lot of growth to do and a lot of room for improvement. But from, you know, early games losing to, you know, Arkansas State and McNeese to you know, coming back and playing as well as we are and beating a team like Memphis, who we still got to play again. Look, we've got home games. We still have home games against Florida Atlantic, Wichita State, SMU, and North Texas, I think. No, we don't have North Texas. Do we have North Texas at home? Anyway, we still got some big home games, but we got to go back. We got to go back and play at Memphis.
Yeah.
You know, so we got it. Like I said, we're on the road at SMU. We've already been to Florida Atlantic. So it's a tough schedule, man. It's it really is. And so the basketball has not disappointed in the American, not at all.
No. And like you said, man, I mean, every night's a cardiac arrest. You never know. And it's funny because the Memphis game was one game where you could actually breathe just a little bit towards the end of it. It actually felt pretty good to be up by 10 or 13 at some point. So great stuff. Toby in Gardendale, and we're going to kill two monster birds with one stone here. And you and I spoke briefly before we started our weekly podcast, UAB Director's Chair, about the situation going on with the University of Tennessee. Yeah, now that the NCAA gets involved, it seems like we're throwing out lawsuits now, and it's just getting really ugly at every single level, whether it's Michigan, whether it's Tennessee. I don't really know enough about this situation. I've read the article, and I'm really not sure what exactly they've done, but obviously it has something to do with the collectives. It has something to do with the NILs, and I can't even imagine the NCAA at this point trying to investigate anything at that level, because I don't think they even know what the rules are. We know that players aren't getting paid to play. We know it's not coming from the university, although the president of the NCAA is now wanting to change that. So they're trying to, I guess, cut out the collectives, correct? They're trying to cut out that middleman so there's not 15 of those things wandering around in a bunch of dirtbags trying to sell your program?
No. Look, I wish that somehow lawfully we could eliminate the collectives. You know, when we made it permissible for a young person to use their own name, image, and likeness for profit, that was what the intention was. Use your name, image, and likeness for profit. So Patrick Mahomes does State Farm commercials, and it has nothing to do with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
That's what it was. That was the idea. There's a small handful of young people in college that are actually doing that. Olivia Dunn, the young lady, the gymnast down at LSU, yeah. Caleb Williams, who won the Heisman Trophy. It did the thing, the Dr. Pepper ads. You know, there's a handful of other ones around the country that, because we're living in Birmingham, we don't see them. They're local ads, that kind of thing. But there's a 500,000 student athletes, and there's 20, you know, that are legitimately doing name, image, and likeness deals. Collectives are just what Al Capone was put in prison for. You know, it's a fake. There is no business. They don't do a business, right? They just pay players, and then the players have to, you know, put out a social media post or something about the collective.
You have to have that collective because it can't come directly from the university because right. The player can't get paid to play. It's got to be a name like it. So yeah. you have to make this shell corporation, if you will. Yeah. So will these shell corporations first? Well, let me ask you this. Tony,
you as a fan cannot directly pay a player unless that player is doing something back for you. So
exactly.
you could pay them to promote your podcast. Yep. You can do that, but it has to be, and that's what it was intended to be. The collectives just don't really require much out of them. And so now everybody has a collective. We have a collective called Magic City Impact. Please support it. It's a new way to recruit and retain your roster. And
is it a non-for-profit?
Most are not. And the IRS initially said that they can't be, though there are some out there that claim to be. So I keep waiting for the IRS to weigh in on that more heavily, but I'm not sure that they've been around long enough for them to get involved in it. But I don't know. You know, what some of the collectives have done is they've said, okay, we're going to pay Tony Curry a certain amount of money, and then Tony's going to go do charity work. Mm-hmm. And that's how they make it a charity. Well, I, whether the IRS says that's okay or not, I don't know. I think that sounds and feels terrible. I think shame on any school or collective that's doing that. I think it's atrocious. It's disgusting. I mean, I want you to imagine this. Student athlete goes into a homeless shelter and is going to feed the homeless for 2 hours. Yeah. This homeless shelter needs funds to help these people that have lost everything they have through whatever circumstance they have. And so they're going to go to the soup kitchen. They're going to feed the homeless for a couple of hours. That shelter needs money to help feed these people and take care of these people and give them clothes and blankets and things to survive. Student athlete walks out the door and some person from the collective hands them an envelope with $1,000 in it. And then the kid puts out a tweet, says, feels so good to give back.
Yeah.
How can anybody go to sleep at night over this?
Yeah.
So I just don't know how the IRS will continue to allow that. I don't know what's going on in Tennessee. I read some articles there. Last thing I want to do is speak about something I don't know. But it's related to something that they allegedly did during the recruitment of their quarterback who started in their bowl game, whose last name I cannot pronounce. And I don't say that to be funny. I just don't want to say it wrong. It's like I'm Oliva or something like that. Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Good player from California. So it's somehow related to him. I think the only thing that I will not be afraid to say that I'm distressed about this is I'm all for their chancellor defending them as she should. I'm all for the president in Michigan defending Jim Harbaugh as he should. But when we start filing lawsuits against the NCAA, look, we are the NCAA.
Yeah, I know it, right?
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the ADs and SWAs and faculty athletic reps and compliance people from all over the country, that's who is the NCAA. We are all on these committees, sport by sport. We make the rules. Mm-hmm. We make the rules. We choose to join the NCAA. And look, if the NCAA disbands, we're just going to form a new thing called the National College Sports Group or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be it, but then we're going to all go, oh, well, we need to have rules. So we've elected to be members of the NCAA so that we can participate in the NCAA championships, People talk about all this money that the basketball tournament makes. Yeah, you know what? The basketball tournament does make a lot of money, which is how we fund the beach volleyball national title and how we fund the golf national title and the women's golf and the tennis and so on and so on and so on. That's how we fund all those things for all these other sports.
So who gives the NCAA its power? If you're eating yourself from the inside out and you're basically suing yourself. And I remember, you know, there's three people that you never wanted to see come to your door: 60 Minutes, the IRS, and the NCAA.
Yeah.
You know, just lock the door, go down to the basement and wait till they go away. The NCAA, funny because you haven't heard a lot from the NCAA. Whenever they came and started doing an investigative, the NCAA's on the ground, you know, in Tuscaloosa. Oh my gosh. I mean, it was going to be the worst next 3 years. You knew they were going to find something. Right. It was going to involve probation, loss of players, you know. And you just haven't heard a lot of that recently. It's strange. And all of a sudden we get the Michigan thing and all of a sudden the Tennessee thing. So I'm not sure why. But if you are the NCAA and you're in a sense suing yourself and it's not being run correctly, and it is a non-for-profit and the NCAA is, what is it that's keeping you or any other AD or president to sit down and say, listen, I mean, you've already got the universities already came together and created this autonomy on your own without the help of the NCAA. So what's keeping you from saying, listen, we're just going to scratch this and start from the bottom up, or I'll tell you what, I'll give you an opportunity as an athletic director to tell me that the NCAA does something good, because everyone hates the NCAA. And yeah, I don't think they get a fair shake.
The talking heads out there who have a microphone that say that kind of thing, and the members of Congress who say that kind of thing, it's because they don't understand what it is.
Exactly.
You know, they generally think that they understand, and they think that the NCAA is this third party group of people. It is not. That we have hired a staff of people who work in Indianapolis. There is a national office. They are simply putting together the meetings that we've requested to have. They are simply organizing and keeping track of the rules that we create. They don't make the rules. We make the rules. They just simply keep the notes and then circulate them back to us and say, hey, this was what was discussed on the golf championship committee. You know, this is how many schools will participate. This is what, you know, if somebody gets hurt in the middle of it, you can substitute or not, that the rules committee comes up with. And the rules committee is made up of the golf coaches, not the NCAA.
Yeah.
They sit on the staff to organize the meeting. And so when people just start talking bad about the NCAA, it's like, it's just hilarious to me. It's like, you're talking about yourself, you know? And so when you hear a politician or, like I said, some sports writer bashing the NCAA, it's like they think they're talking about all these people that make rules. Hey man, we are those people that make the rules. Yeah, we've got Charlie Baker as the president because he's got to organize the staff, right? And as things are changing, he's informing us and meeting with the media and various presidents and whatever to help do what they've asked him to do. He doesn't have his own personal agenda.
Yeah.
And so that's what's distressing to me is when people talk about what does the NCAA do? Well, the NCAA provides, I don't know, it's like 40 championships, 40 national championships to 40 different sports, you know, and you may not care about all those other sports, but the student athletes and their parents and their coaches that all participate sure as heck do. You want to know how the track national championship happens? That. You want to know how the swimming national title happens? NCAA.
Yeah.
And they're funded, their main funding source, the vast majority of that comes from the men's basketball tournament. No question. Just like in my department, the vast majority of my funding comes from football. Whether it be ticket sales or merchandising or marketing dollars, the vast majority of my funding on a campus level is from football, and then men's basketball is number two for us, and probably the same for everybody. And then, you know, what's third for you might be different for me. For me, it's baseball, but for Tennessee, that might be baseball, might be women's basketball. I don't know.
This reminds me of you and me being brothers, and we've both done something wrong, but we both want to go to mom and dad and tell them about it. And it's like, don't do it because you're going to take us both down. And mom and dad are the NCAA. And right. What the NCAA then does is then all of a sudden you're suing mom and dad basically by going. And I don't want my government involved in any of this. I really don't. Whether it's a strike, whether it's an NCAA situation, I don't want my government involved because our government's got enough crap going on. They don't need to be worrying about what's going on.
I want them to worry about the national defense. Let's talk about inflation, the national debt. Let's talk about our defense. Let's talk about unemployment, the road system, infrastructure. This is what I want the government to deal with.
Yeah.
I don't need you to worry about this. It's silly.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So, all right, UABSports.com. UABSports.com is the website. They do fantastic work. He is Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director. Just so much stuff going down there with the basketball program. And I just, it's we're now into February, so March Madness is right around the corner. Now is when you want to start seeing that basketball program start to put some stuff together, and they're doing that. You mentioned the women's program. What else is going on down there in athletic world that you're super proud of? I know you're proud of everything that's down there at UAB, but what else is going on that perhaps we're not keen about?
Yeah, well, we're getting ready to start baseball and softball here in about 2 weeks. They're going to be taking the field, and Casey Dunn's team on the baseball side, AJ Daugherty on the softball side. AJ Daugherty in his first year last season, we recognized him at the Memphis game. In fact, he was the Conference USA Coach of the Year in our last year in CUSA. And so, it was his first year with us, but he was the Conference Coach of the Year. And then we had a young lady named Sierra Frazier. She was our catcher, and Sierra was the Conference Player of the Year, which is a huge honor. And she's graduated, unfortunately, and she's back in California, which is where she's from. And she's doing some coaching and some strength training out there, which is what she's really passionate about. But we had her back as well at the Memphis game, both of them, to recognize them in front of our fans and our crowd. I sat with Coach Daugherty last night at our women's basketball game, and we just talked, gave me a good opportunity to just, preseason practice going, and how do you feel? And right now they're healthy. That's one of the hardest things in baseball and softball is keeping your pitchers healthy, keeping everybody healthy. And that's true in every sport, right? But if your pitching isn't healthy, you're going to be in trouble. Those sports, baseball and softball, can so frequently, you got to have offense, you got to be able to hit the ball. But defense is actually less important. Defense is like, be good enough, Tony, to not get me beat. You don't have to be, you don't have to be Derek Jeter out there. I don't have to have that, but I need to have a good shortstop, right? But if I got a great pitcher, I don't need a lot of fielding, right? Yeah. So it comes down to pitching and hitting. And so just keeping everybody healthy. But yeah, we're excited that both those teams take the field here in a couple of weeks. And they're practicing now, but they start playing games mid-February.
All right, Rolling Stone magazine just came out with their top 25 1979 albums of all time to mark the 25th anniversary of 1979 albums. And I like to look back at those things because I'm thinking to myself, it's 25 years ago. That's not like, well, actually, it's 45 years ago. Pardon me. it's closer to 50 years than it is 25. But they came up with their top 25 albums from 1979. So it's been a long time. And I wanted to go ahead and throw out the top 10. And I want you to tell me if you actually own these albums, and if you did, where you put them in your realm? Okay. Number one, Pink Floyd, The Wall.
No, I'm not a Pink Floyd fan. I know that makes classic rock people want to despise me. I just thought it was weird. I just never loved Pink Floyd. Talented guys, I just didn't like their music.
I'm the same way. Maybe it's because my brother was a dope smoker, and I know he liked to listen to Pink Floyd a lot. I can remember smelling it, and it was just too lazy and weird to me. And he had his headphones on, and it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Same way about Rush. I never loved Rush.
Yeah. Now I do like me some Rush. Number two, Tom Petty, The Heartbreakers, Damn the Torpedoes.
Yep.
Number three of all time, The Clash, London Calling.
I did not have that, but I'm a fan of that.
Okay. An album that a lot of people thought was probably the worst Led Zeppelin record they ever came out with, and I think it's only gotten better over time. In Through the Outdoor, Led Zeppelin, number four.
You know what? I did not have that one. I'm a Led Zeppelin fan, though. I've been to two of their concerts years ago. Awesome.
A Carousel of Ambrance, got a hot dog on it. Fool in the Rain, obviously. I thought it was great. And of course, that was the one that came in the brown, remember, it came in the brown paper bag because they said it was such a lousy album. they wanted to cover it up. Number five, Fleetwood Mac Tusk.
Yep, I had that.
Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Rust Never Sleeps, number six.
No, I you know, Neil Young was a little too much of a folk singer for me.
Frankie, yeah.
I like some of his songs, but not enough to get an album.
How about the album, I Can't Tell You Why, The Disco Strangler, The Sad Cafe, The Eagles, The Long Run?
Yep. Yeah, I had every Eagles album.
You like them?
Yeah, huge Eagles fan. Saw them in concert. You know, there was a concert tour called Hell Freezes Over because they said, we'll get together when Hell Freezes Over. But they did that in the mid-90s, I think, and I went to that show. It was terrific. That's when they were all still alive. And now they're touring again. And in fact, somebody, it might have been you, but somebody recently said that they were going to Florida to see them soon because eventually it's like their last show ever in Orlando.
Well, they've decided to continue to play as long as people continue to come see them. So they're like, we're just going to keep adding shows. And as of the last leg, Steely Dan was actually the opening act. I mean,
how about that?
Steely Dan. And,
that'd be great.
I mean, how good is that? Number eight, AC/DC, Highway to Hell.
Oh, yeah,
I had
it.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's just crazy. Here's one I think you'll like. Van Halen, number two, comes in at number nine.
Hey, bro, all of them.
That album just, did it have Dance the Night Away, had Beautiful Girls on it?
Yeah, both.
That album was just like, you could open your next door neighbor's garage and four grungy kids are playing. That's what Van Halen was. Number 10, Elvis Costello and the Attractions, Armed Forces.
You can have that one.
All right, I got to go a little deeper in here because this is Rolling Stone, and you know it's Rolling Stone magazine. They're going to have some funk in there, right? The Talking Heads, Fear of Music, number 11.
Yeah, I thought they were a little, you know, they were weird, but I kind of, they were quirky enough that, you know, like I couldn't like listen to, I could listen to Van Halen just all day.
Yeah.
I could go to a Van Halen concert tonight and again tomorrow night and the next night. I'd go to a Talking Heads show just because it would be so quirky and weird. But
would we have ever known who David Byrne and the Talking Heads are if we didn't have MTV?
No, I don't know, man. That helped.
I don't think we would, and that is amazing to me because without MTV, I don't know if I would have ever been turned on to Adam Ant, Devo, right. Devo, who's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now, and the Talking Heads, and the Talking Heads are still playing music.
Are they really?
Yeah, David Byrne's doing something on Broadway.
How about that? I mean,
it's crazy. Just a couple more because these are just funky. David Bowie, The Lodger.
Yeah, I was a huge Bowie fan. You're talking about one of the all-time greats in David Bowie.
Here's one for you. Number 13, Michael Jackson's Off the Wall.
Of course. I had, I don't know if I had every Michael Jackson album, but maybe. I some of his, his early stuff is what I had. Mm-hmm. I know I had everything through Thriller. After that, I'm not sure.
Album Mike, I just could not get into, and I still don't. Walking on the Moon, A Message in a Bottle, or The Police, Regatta de Blanc. It just was a little weird. That I put them in that Rush group. They were just a little weird to me. It was a little strange.
Now I like The Police.
I do like The Police. I mean, I obviously, you know, when they,
you know, they have kind of a The Police had kind of a reggae flavor to them.
Oh yeah,
and I like that. I like reggae music and I think that is sort of why I like them so much.
All right, a couple more. These are the top 25 albums from 1979, which is 45 years ago. I don't know where I thought it was 25. ZZ Top, DeGuelo.
Oh, yeah.
Number 16, Graham Parker and the Rumors, Squeezing Out Sparks. Any clue?
No.
That's where there's one of those Rolling Stones. I'm like, I'm sorry. I've been doing classic rock since I was three. I have no clue. The Cars, Candy O.
Oh, love The Cars.
I love that album. I think love that album is fantastic. What a great piece of artwork on the front cover of that. And I'll just give you the last through. Joy Division, Unknown Pleasures, number 18, 19, Night in the Ruts from Aerosmith. I didn't think Aerosmith came out with anything in the late 70s.
I didn't have that. I had a lot of Aerosmith stuff. I love Steven Tyler and that whole band, but I don't think I had that.
And just so you don't forget, Cheap Trick, Dream Police was in here. Motorhead, Overkill was in here.
I had both of those.
Roxy Music, Manifesto was in here. Look Sharp and Joe Jackson, the B-52s, their original B-52s.
I love the B-52s now.
Foreigner, Kiss Dynasty, awesome. About 1979. Awesome. Foreigner's Head Games, The Cure, Three Imaginary Boys, Wings, Back to the Egg, Christopher Cross, the Christopher Cross album.
Yeah.
And I think that's still the only album that actually won Single of the Year, Album of the Year, and what was it, Singer, Songwriter of the Year? It won all the big Grammys that one year, and it was his first album that he ever came out with.
So how about those are good ones, man.
Great stuff, my friend. Hey, I appreciate you, and we'll catch up next week. Looking forward to the big blackout coming out. Go to UABSports.com, UABSports.com, and we'll catch up next week, okay?
Sounds great, Tony. Have a good
Thank
week.
Thank you, brother. You too, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.